this is better than normal vanilla interactions because we have to have a lot of conversations. It's not that you can't spank somebody on the ass anymore. It's just that you have to be damn sure that that person wants to be spanked on the ass.
Hello and welcome back, dear Spanky Next listeners. I'm one of your hosts, Anna, and I'm in the studio with Gregor, and this is episode 33 of our Fetish and BDSM podcast.
Hey everybody. Hey Anna, how you doing? Are you already in the Christmas mood?
You know what? I am getting into the Christmas mood because I'm a bit sick today, so I put on Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh no. Oh.
Have you seen it?
Isn't it with Meg Ryan?
Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks, a classic. And the way it's actually kind of creepy though. She like stalks him basically.
It is really creepy. All kind of loads of the old romantic comedies are, if
yeah,
you think
really,
about
like
it.
You've Got Mail, same duo.
You Got Mail, I know. I watched it on the plane from Barcelona to Istanbul last week.
Oh, that's a good segue into talking about your recent trip.
Oh, yes. Just wanted to name drop here, like holiday drop. I went to Istanbul. It was really nice. Oh, God, I have to share about Istanbul. Okay, you know, I'm in a happily committed relationship for a couple of months now. But
yeah, where is this going?
But I was in Istanbul with on a work trip, actually, with colleagues from work. And I have this one colleague, also gay, let's call him Tom. And you know who I'm talking about. And he is so flirty. And you know, in Istanbul, the whole gay thing, it's a bit of a problem. But he literally hooked up with guys on the streets, took them back to the hotel room where they had amazing sex.
Really?
Who would
I love
thought?
It. Is this just, are you just talking about you and you're saying this guy, Tom?
I would love to be talking about me. No. But the only thing I had was alcohol. That's what I had in Istanbul.
Fair. Oh, yeah. That's the thing. Like, how open is it there? Because I know some people have said they don't feel safe in, you know, Istanbul as a queer person. But did you find the opposite?
I felt really safe. Yeah, I think it's a really divided country. They have very strong traditions and, of course, very, very strong political leaders and very strong religious traditions also.
It's that kind of secular versus Islamic mix, isn't it? So I imagine Istanbul's like a melting pot of both.
It
and
is.
Then there's some areas of Turkey where it's like one or the other.
And it's a huge city, 16 million people.
I know, that's
it's
crazy.
Crazily huge. So I think, like, you know, being gay, you definitely have to be careful what you talk about on the streets, maybe also how you dress. But of course, homosexuality exists and people are horny in Istanbul.
People are horny as fuck.
Yeah.
And taking us back to why we're here, our Fetish and BDSM podcast. If you're just joining us, this is a kinky podcast where we sit down with a guest who is usually in the kink community and we talk about all the things that get them off. And we're talking about Istanbul because Gregor went there. But also, I remember when we worked for fetish.com and when we opened up the market to Turkey, it was actually a really popular destination in terms of conversions because I don't think there's many apps and communities in Turkey for people that are kinky. So people were really trying to find us.
You know, that's a really good point because, you know, even though some countries might be really traditional or even really religious, people are horny, people are gay. It's just something that exists. So apps like fetish.com are really necessary in these places.
Absolutely. Okay, so should we get into today's episode?
Yes. Who are we talking to today, Anna?
Okay, we are talking to Todd Max Carey. He is a film producer, director, a writer, and an editor from Canada. And he has just produced and directed a film all about kink. He's doing the film festival circuit. It's a super cool documentary that follows the lives of different people. A lot of dominatrixes, one sub. And I think it's a very interesting time to have like a quite well-made documentary about the kink scene because either it's like Vice documentaries or they're quite grainy and grillery, the ones I've seen.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? This is quite a high production value and it seems to be really well received.
Let's be honest here, it's hard to get high quality content like fetish like fetish.com and Spanky Next when it comes to the kinky scene. So yeah,
exactly.
Very much appreciated.
Sorry. Just name dropping yourself. Where was I? Oh, but yeah, it's also hard to get people to go on camera and talk about their kinky lives. But when we spoke to him, he said actually he had absolutely no problem finding people that were happy to live their kinky lives on screen, which kind of surprised me, Gregor. I think some people would be hesitant about that.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And also because I think that's what's really needed, no? Voices from the kinky world to talk about what they do, because there's still so many misconceptions out there.
100%. So the film is called Touch Kink. In this, we get into his personal experiences with kink from a very young age, knowing he was kinky, and then exploring this through his art, through his work, and through his personal life. And I think there's no one who can say it better, so shall we just get him in here?
Let's get him in here.
Welcome, Todd Max Carey, producer, director, and writer to Spanky Next. How about give everyone an intro to who you are and the film Touch Kink?
Well, my name is Todd Max Carey, but everybody calls me Max. I've been on the scene, well, I've been kinky as long as I could remember. I think I was kinky before I knew that was a thing. I've just enjoyed traveling out to different countries and into different communities, and I find that the kink community is just one of these wonderful communities where people are very open, and you can have conversations about virtually anything. Not to say that people are into everything. It's just that there's usually this sort of openness to at least, you know, let you talk about whatever thing that you might be interested in. And after traveling to so many countries, traveling to these subcultures just seemed like a natural next extension. So about 7 years ago, as kinky as I was, and as much as I thought I knew about it, I met a dominatrix, who I have to say I was rather unexpected. I thought, like many people, I suppose, that, oh, these are going to be tough, bitchy women that are always going to want control and be like difficult. And even though I'd had all this experience in my life, I was so pleasantly surprised by this human being and realized I, who've had this opportunity to travel and do all of these things, had a really big misconception about a scene that I'm part of. And that conversation and that realization was the genesis for Touch Kink.
So as much as you are a filmmaker, this is kind of also a personal expedition and exploration coming from a personal experience as well, right?
Absolutely. I always make the analogy I was more the builder than the architect before. I had often worked constructing things, but it was someone else's design. Somebody else was the artistic. I always used to joke that I'd be never crazy enough to direct a film because that's a sure way to lose money. And it is. where the builder, the person that's actually sort of doing the work, always gets paid. Most of my life, I was the cameraman, I was the editor, I was the production manager, that kind of thing. But I always wanted to direct, and this just became the right time of my life and a personal mission. And all the stars sort of aligned up, and we're off to the races.
How long were you working on the film?
Way too long. Yeah. Just over 7 years.
Wow.
Did 120 days of filming over about a year and a half. Various things came up along the way that sort of impacted, you know, the production, including COVID and other things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a long process.
Before we get into the film, which is obviously something we're super excited to talk about, you say like you sort of knew you were kinky from a young age, as a lot of kinky people will say that they do. What was the scene like when you were growing up, and like what was this like discovery that you had?
Well, honestly, it was just the realization that I didn't really fit in. I didn't get along. I didn't have the same sort of aspirations or the same interests as the people around me. I didn't really feel like I understood or got along with anybody. Nowadays, you'd probably call me queer. I was called queer as a prerogative, as a pejorative when I was younger. Now, with what that means in terms of being fluid about most things and open about most things, I think that actually suits me quite well. But yeah, the biggest thing when I was young is I couldn't figure out why people didn't do exactly what they wanted to. They all said, I want to do this, but I can't. And I realized naturally that I didn't really understand why I was able to just to figure it out and do what I wanted. And I realized I was naturally quite dominant in the sense that I didn't really listen to other people so much. I may listen to their ideas or whatever, but in the end, I was fairly confident I was on the right path. So it was sort of more of a dominance and not realizing I wasn't fitting in. And then years later, I came across a book by Jay Wiseman called SM 101. And I think one of the opening chapters or the opening introduction is just, well, very small percent of people are actually dominant. And they kind of have these traits. And this is, you're lucky, or this is who you are. If you're in, like, bell started ringing, and I was, oh, this is it. This is why I've always just done what I wanted to, because it's kind of my nature. So it was more realizing I was kinky, or I don't even like the word kinky anymore, actually. It's just, not like most people on a different kind of spectrum. I having read that, and a lot fell into life. And then that led me more into the kink community, because there was that thing where people were talking about those roles and dynamics, and just life just became a little bit easier to understand. And then I just got more and more into it.
How did you go from this internal process of you thinking, okay, this might be something that I would like to explore, to actually getting out in the real world and exploring your fetishes, your BDSM, your kink?
I probably have to give that to January as well. This is the dominatrix that I'd met. She introduced me to FetLife, and then FetLife, I found a bunch of different events and contacts and started just meeting people. I guess going into sort of the real life kind of experience was just finding a community out there that thought like me, being able to go to events and meet other people and have discussions and figure it out step by step.
So let's talk about Touch Kink. It's a documentary about the world of BDSM, and it sort of follows the characters or eyes of four people, right? There's Grace the dominatrix, another dominatrix called Mistress Eveline, Robin the slave, and former Dom January, who you mentioned. So tell us a little bit about the inspiration for the film and why these characters.
The truth was, I wouldn't recommend anyone doing this particular approach again. I wanted to make an honest documentary about real people. So I started with 120 or so people, just said, hey, what's going on in your life? And then sort of track them, say, well, what's happening? And, for good for them, bad for me, a lot of people, nothing really happened. And then some people, like Avalon, had problems with the police. And I knew that Grace was not into this. She thought everybody was sort of damaged and crazy and all the rest of it. So I knew that was going to be interesting either way. And then, Robin, the story evolved. So it's really just wanting to do an honest story to sort of give you the notions of why people aren't as damaged or not damaged just because they're kinky. They may be damaged, but that happens to everybody. To sort of dispel misconceptions and try and make a little bit of an argument for why, and I do believe this is better than normal vanilla interactions, because we have to have a lot of conversations. It's not that you can't spank somebody on the ass anymore. It's just that you have to be damn sure that that person wants to be spanked on the ass. And it's a very important distinction, because I think a lot of people are like, oh my God, I can never do that again. Well, actually, just have a conversation. There are a lot of people that like to be called all sorts of names and have all sorts of things done to them, but you just can't assume everybody's like that because of their gender or their look or whatever. But it doesn't mean you can't do those activities between consulting people. So I thought it was sort of answering a question that's going on in the culture right now and having a conversation about consent, and also try to highlight aftercare, which is something that I think people, even in the scene, sometimes forget.
I think this is such a good point. Anne and I, we always say that even vanilla people, they should do aftercare. I mean, they should at least check in with each other after sex and just see, hey, how are things going between us?
I would actually say, we should check in after this interview. How is things going? It's like every activity, every human interaction should start with discussion, yes. Some level of consent. Then we have the fun part of playing right now and then going, how was that for you? How was that for me? Business, personal, sexual, kinky, should always follow that circle, because you're essentially, by aftercare, you're going back to negotiation. It's kind of like aftercare is already sort of your beginning of negotiation. You're creating a circle. And that's such a healthy thing. And everything in nature is this organic wave. And the difference between what we do and what abusive people do is that it could be the same thing. Smack somebody around, blah, blah, blah. It sounds very abusive, but they're not finishing that circle. It's what I do this, and poof, fuck you. It's not the activity. Was the circle followed? Was that negotiated? Was that cared for? Was there consent? If it's abusive, it's linear. Violence is linear. Violence is, I do it and fuck you kind of thing. And that's the nature of it.
Especially with like vanilla couples, I think there's a unwillingness to understand the other side in a way that also comes from a bit of like insecurity to understand, like, were you into that? Did you like that? And I think that the way, like, especially like cishet couples interact, it can really perpetuate this idea that like it's all about a performance, and once it's done, it should be good or bad. Nothing can be improved, and that diminishes it if you say, oh, well, actually, I didn't really like that, and I'd like this next time. So I think the communication we see in kink dynamics can be so helpful for everyone, and yet it is massively stigmatized still.
It really is, and sometimes I forget. I mean, I'm in the process of licensing my film all over the world, and I get some of the weirdest questions, like, you know, is this pornographic? Is this whatever? And like, no, it's actually PG. And one, I read an article the other day, and I actually, when I first read it, I thought, I don't know if you know The Onion. Have you heard of The Onion?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like this.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was from The Onion, actually, for a second reading. It was about a woman who's, you know, met the man of her dreams, loved a super wonderful guy. They were together for months and months and, you know, really felt this is a man of her life. And then apparently he said he had a few kinks, and they talked about it. Eventually we got around to talking about his kinks. And he finally gets around that his kink is that he'd like her to wear rubber sometimes, some latex sometimes. And she thought that was freaky and immediately broke up with him and wrote an article about how people are just weird. And I was like, what? Like, I thought of it, you know, and it was a serious sort of mainstream article sort of justifying that, you know, this person had this freaky kink that was why it was reasonable for her to break up with this man that in all other, by her own admission, she thought was the perfect guy. Why was that? Probably more society sort of imprinting her that somebody wants to wear rubber or latex must be some sort of deviant. And that's, you know, he revealed himself as a deviant, and that was a shock, and that was that. And I read it twice thinking, this has got to be a joke, right? And it wasn't. It was a serious mainstream article that I was in a ladies' magazine. And, you know, it's just so sad that, you know, I get there are some kinks that, you know, I'm not into, but I don't know that, you know, I'm just saying a politely no. But that one was just so soft and gentle that I was just like, okay, so you're happy to wear lace and cotton, but if he buys you a latex dress, you'd be freaked out. Okay.
But you know what I think, kind of people who have such a limited worldview, they suffer a lot because everything's a threat to them. So everything that doesn't go with the way they see the world or how people are supposed to be is like a threat to their way of life, and then they suffer because of it. So it's like you make one bad discovery after another because people are weird and people are really different and people are very,
I guess it comes from this tribal thing. You know, we used to have tribes and our tribe was against their tribe. And I suppose tribes have now expanded to nations or whatever. It's the same sort of stuff. There's us against them. You know, there's always that kind of notion of this tribalism. And in our tribe, you know, latex is clearly a deviant behavior. That's so unfortunate, but it seems to be a human thing. There's a concept Professor Overton came up with called the Overton window. What is within the realm of acceptable society? And what's sort of completely acceptable, what's at the fringes, and what's outside? And it varies depending on different societies at different times as well. In Roman times, bisexuality was infinitely more accepted than it is. It was actually pretty much smack dab in the middle. Where now it's still more on the fringes. It's within the, what says in the window. It's not right outside of things that thou shalt not discuss. But, you know, this is a very fluid thing that moves from culture, and it's fascinating. And one of the things I'm hoping to do is just, you know, get kink a little bit more into the Overton window. It's certainly right on the edge right now. And it's also this big nebulous thing. I mean, you might as well just say human activity, because I'm of the opinion, perhaps controversial, that kink doesn't even really exist. Everyone just likes what they like. You know, one of the things that I really spent a lot of time thinking about is this even real? It's not. It's made up. We're making it up as we were. It's like people want to label themselves for political purposes to, you know, get noticed. The queer community was one of which I'm part of, was not originally welcomed into the LGBT family, had to, you know, but once we got the little label, got in there, we're happy to get the letter put on. People want to label themselves to get into a community, but the truth is we're all fluid on everything. We're all fluid on everything. We're male, female spectrum, if you want to define it that way. I'd actually even tend to get rid of that one from every other point of view except for biological. Mm-hmm. Procreation is about the only time you need to worry about that, as far as I'm concerned.
What you're saying is that kind of what we perceive as vanilla and what we perceive as kink is completely arbitrary, and the line could be at a complete different point. Yeah.
History backs me up. I mean, a bikini would have been considered kinky during Victorian times. And I've literally been to kink events where people are wearing Victorian clothing, as that is now kinky. It's absurd. Mm. You know, we just, yeah. What it is, you know, more to do with fashion. In the end, I think it boils down to, you know, every kink or human interaction of a passionate kind boils down to three things. What are you particularly fascinated with at the time? And it couldn't be vanilla people. Sometimes it's just the classic, oh, she's hot. That's it. That's what they want. Okay. So for kinky people, it could be, oh, look at the feet. Oh, look at those eyes. Look at the latex. Look at the whatever. But there's something in your mind that's drawing you to that individual at that time. Okay. So it's your fetish, your desire, your focus of intent. Maybe it's that the warm, glowy, wonderful, loving creature that that person is. Whatever it is, something you're focused on. Then there's the who you feel right now, your role. Am I dominant? Am I submissive? Am I switchy? Do I feel feminine? Do I feel whoever you feel? It can be your identity. It can be a role you're playing in any given moment. And the last thing is, what do you want to feel? What are you looking for? This, I want to feel proud of myself at the end of this interview for doing a great interview. Oh, I want to be turned on because of the beautiful voice. I want to feel humiliated because I feel like I'm a worthless person and I really need this person to beat me up. If you think about it from those three points of view, you can understand every single human interaction. And those things are always moving around. And kink is just, you know, clearly helps you define that a little. Like, okay, it's latex. It's I'm the dom and I want to have an orgasm, or I just want to feel proud of myself or in control. But I mean, that's it.
Exactly what you say. Like, there's this need for like a tribe. But also, what do you think about the categories, especially in the kink community? Like, when we've been talking to people recently, they've said that there's actually like too much categorization and the community can be a little bit fragmented because there's so much like culture wars everywhere and it's in the kink community. Is that something you've seen?
Oh, absolutely. That's becoming more and more of an issue. I mean, I don't think it's any big secret that there's a massive overlap between sort of the geeky community and the kink community. And what it is to be geeky is to be like Descartes. You know, you want to like understand every little piece of it and understand the mechanism and refine and differentiate and diagnose. And, you know, so it's natural that people are going to go down the rabbit hole. Because if you're passionate about rope, you become passionate about a particular kind of rope, particular kinds of knots. And then, you know, you're doing it right and everyone else is doing it wrong. But that's just human stuff. That's just maturity.
Let's go back to the film and talk about sort of how easy is it to find people that are willing to put their kinky lives out there on screen? I mean, it sounded like you had 120 people. Was that so quite a lot, I'd say. And generally, what's the reaction been on the film festival circuit and anyone who's seen it, basically? What feedback are you hearing?
It was actually shockingly easy for me to find people because I was vouched for. What happens like any other community, it's like, you know, I'll vouch for this guy. His intentions are good. I trust him. And if, you know, I'll take responsibility otherwise. So, you know, a few people interviewed, a few people. It's funny, I remember walking into one event, a dominatrix event called DomCon. And there was dominatrix looked at me and literally said, "What the hell are you doing here?" She was very like this. And, you know, had a little conversation with her and sat down with her and did an interview with her and ended up dating her. And we were together for about a year. And
amazing. Worth going
then. But basically you're vouched for and people trust your intentions. And that was one of the hardest things. The scariest thing I ever did is that everyone signed model releases, I didn't need to. But again, I tried to hold myself to this really high standard. So the very first screening was in front of the people that were in it. And I made it clear that if anyone had an issue with anything, I would let them withdraw consent and remove them from the film. I really hope they didn't, because at that point, yeah, it would have been quite expensive. It was terrifying, but they agreed. So no one had an issue. And that was that. So, you know, it's just about building that confidence, building that trust. It's hard to earn trust in the community, very easy to lose it. So I'm just, once you build it, it becomes organic and grows. To answer your second question about the film festival circuit and the general presentation of it. It's been my first screening was sold out, 350 people, giant theater at Fantasia. So far, every screening has been sold out. So that's good. I think there's a lot of interest. I'm doing a lot of touring with it to contain communities as well, because I currently have a sponsor that's picking up the tab for my wanderings, because they want me to try and find some kink content creators for them. And the reception's been good. I would say the only thing I've learned is that it's being accepted better by women than men. I think women are a little bit more open to both sides of the spectrum, the dominant submission, they'll play in there, they're a little bit more open to that. Where a lot of a lot of the lifestyle scene is still fairly heterosexual, classic sort of male dom, female submissives. And I generally find in communities where I'm going to an event, which is kind of has a very strong sort of male dom kind of feel to it, and generally women are submissive at that, and I'm getting a little bit of, thanks, you know, it's a little bit, I think it's because they're, you know, I intentionally chose, and the people I had, that most of the dominant characters are women. That was it was both the people I met, and it was also a bit of strategy. I knew it was going to be tough getting into the market already, but I figured it would be almost impossible if I made this about all male doms doing things to female submissives. I think it would even be a harder push. So there's, you know, so generally I'm getting about an 83% approval on women over 30 and like 24% over men. They can't get it. Yeah.
When I think back, I think now kind of 3 years or 4 years ago, Anna and I, we went to this kink event in Hamburg. And for me, it was the first big kink event I went to. And it was what you said in the beginning, the community was so open and so welcoming. So it was really nice to talk to people there. But at the same point, and I think it was like the second or third day that we sat, it's really mainly male doms and female submissives. It stuck out so much. And, you know, we thought that the gender issue in the kink community would be different. And what we saw there was just, you know, what the actually things that we would have imagined before.
I think what's interesting about that is something that since we've been to kink events, we've also noticed, is how prominent the dominatrix figure is in vanilla culture. And like wider culture, it's like the powerful man who works a city job going to a dominatrix, you know. But really, actually, it's not as subversive as that. In a lot of like kink communities, it often is the more traditional, you know, male dom, female sub. So I just wanted to put that observation in there as well.
Yeah, there's no question that there's a lot more male doms than there are female doms, which is why people will pay big money to go see professional female dominatrixes. They have the craft, they have the skill. But I think it's also pigeonholing ourselves. I mean, I do feel, I've always felt very dominant, and I've always felt someone that fit more on the D side, but I find myself getting increasingly switchy now out of curiosity and out of confidence that why not? I mean, if I really am fetishizing, using my own little model of fetishizing something particular, you know, maybe try it in the other side of the slash. And I think what happens is that's again, maturity and time. You get there and go like, why am I so up in my ass about being dominant all the time? If this person wants, if I want to interact with this person wants to play the dominant side, am I really so insecure as to not be on the other side of that slash for a moment or two? I think it takes time for you to get there. And I think, you know, people still, even in the kink community, sometimes the cultural overlap of, well, men are supposed to be in control kind of, you know, comes across a little bit, kind of is influenced. And so like, well, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm just an extra manly man like John Wayne or something, you know? So yeah. I think a lot of the doms aren't really, I mean, we're all on a spectrum anyway. It's like he put 100 slaves together. Somebody's going to emerge as the dominant, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a label of where you are on a spectrum. So, and there's a big sort of schism between the sort of classic BDSM focused community lifestyle and the fetish community. The fetish community is a little bit more about sex, a little bit more about, you know, the orgasm or some sort of more sexual thing. Not exclusively, but generally, I would say is a little bit more about that. Where the BDSM community is often not about you know, any kind of sexual activity at all. And obviously there's exceptions on both sides, but for the most part, so those communities kind of view each other a little differently. Sometimes the lifestyle community will view the fetish latex crowd as really just like swingers that like to dress up and really not part of our thing. And yeah, the BDSM community and their dark leather, whatever, you know, but it's just, it's what people like, and there's no right and wrong to any of this stuff.
And I think people are fascinated. Like, you know, there's always been like a lot of articles written on the BDSM community by like mainstream publications, a lot in films. Fashion is really having like a BDSM moment right now, high fashion. So while I think it's much more in the cultural ether, I still think that people very much have a misconception about it. And I think it's where we go from like the 50 Shades of Grey onwards and the fetishization of fetish itself to just people maybe experimenting a bit more and being okay with that and not being scared that they'll go and then they have to like surrender and be beaten up. You know, I think people don't really understand that when you go to an event, it doesn't play out like that at all.
Yeah, and that's why I tried to, with the film, is to sort of like, you know, make the argument why this is safer than you think, because people follow, you know, these protocols. And, you know, usually, you know, you'd be at a wild event, you're safer there than you are at a regular bar, because nobody mm-hmm. wants to get a bad reputation. I like to always make the analogy of going to another country, because, you know, some of the cliches are true when you go there, and some are like, why did people say that about that country? You know, there's so many worlds that until you know, you don't know. So we go where we go, we learn what we learn, you know, books are filled with things we don't know.
I was just thinking, I think our listeners are wondering, where is there anywhere they can see the documentary? Is it online or are you really just touring festivals right now?
I'm just touring festivals right now. I believe we've licensed it to Israeli TV and German TV now. I think Italian maybe as well. But that won't be broadcast probably for another 6 months, 8 months. It'll eventually be available on Apple TV and Amazon, the usual VOD platforms. Okay. It varies from country to country. The best thing to do for people that are genuinely interested is to sign up for my newsletter. I have a newsletter that basically is geolocated as well. So if it's you're from Serbia, whenever I get news from Serbia, you get the news. You're in Germany and so forth. So that's the best way for people to get information about the film, where to be broadcast, because it will be different. So bottom line, best thing to do is sign up for my newsletter if they're interested, or just keep Googling Touch Kink, hashtag Touch Kink, and touchkink.com.
Touchkink.com. We'll put also a link in our show notes, so any listener who's interested will sign up. Mike, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. We will follow your work, and I'm sure our listeners will too.
All right.
Max.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Todd Max Carey, the first filmmaker we have on the podcast that doesn't do porno. Like, a real first
true,
for us.
Yeah. True.
I really like this because, as I said in the intro, I think it's so important to get voices from the kinky community on the big screen. Also because it would really help normalize it. And with normalizing it and bringing kink to a bigger audience, we can also kind of get the toxicity out of kink, because people need to be informed.
Preach, preach. But also, I think when people do things about people in the kink community, it's usually from people who aren't in it.
Oh, good point. Mm.
You know, I think if we do look at like Vice, not to say that it's not good content, but generally it's a journalist finding something super interesting and then going and filming it or interviewing someone about it. But we're not actually hearing from the voices living it all the time.
I love how we are roasting Vice in this episode, even though we're probably reading them all the time.
Even though obviously I'd love to have worked there back in the day. Obviously. We'll put a link to the film in the show notes. I think it will be becoming available in different stores. So go onto the website, follow his work, and when it comes to a screen near you, definitely go and catch it.
Good times. Looking forward to the next episode, and until then,
keep it kinky.
don't forget to subscribe to Spanky Next on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Spanky Next Podcast.
If you'd like to connect with people who share your kinks, sign up to fetish.com for free or download the Fet app from Google Play Store and the App Store now.
And for any one of you who is looking to deepen their knowledge of kink, head to the BDSM training school on fetish.com and enroll in a course now.
And last but not least, shout out to our producer, Billy Cragen, our kinky team, and everyone who makes this podcast possible.